I suspect everybody here is familiar with red herrings. Am I right? It's a plot element or device that's meant to throw you off, and ultimately it means nothing. But how about MacGuffins? Do you know what a MacGuffin is? So I suspected there wouldn't be as much awareness of this, and I'm going to provide you with a little bit of explanation. A MacGuffin is something that is important to the plot, but is not important in and of itself. So it could be a person or event or a thing that gets the story rolling, but it really doesn't matter to the resolution. Now, this phrase is attributed to Angus MacPhail and was popularized by Alfred Hitchcock. Okay? So he spoke about it at Columbia in the 1930s, and he tried to give a little story explaining it. But the truth is that MacGuffins long preceded Hitchcock. Think about the Holy Grail and the Arthurian legends and what's important in those stories. Not the cup, but the quest. And go back even further to this story from Matthew. The fact is that this passage from Scripture is loaded up with MacGuffins, things that are important to get the story rolling and to catch our attention, but ultimately they are distractions. We're going to go through them one by one. We'll start with those magi, those wise men. Now, tradition says there are three, and you notice we have three of them here in our creche. But there's nothing in the text about how many there were. And the early church postulated that there might be 12, another symbolically rich number. We do not know their names. There is nothing in the text that tells us that they were named Caspar and Balthasar and Melchior. They could have been Larry, Curly, and Moe. Yeah. We do not know. To the point about the magus, which is a singular for magi, and what they were. One theory is that they were wise men, but we don't know. They may have been magicians. They may have been astronomers. They may have been astrologers. And possibly, perhaps, they were kings, but there's no evidence for that either. But the church, over the centuries, has developed stories for these three characters. And in some ways, that has led us away from the meaning of this passage. Now, one of the reasons it's been postulated that there might have been three of them was that there are three gifts: gold, frankincense, and myrrh. We know that gold and frankincense and myrrh were expensive. They were valuable. But we do not know why those particular gifts were brought. There's nothing in the text that tells us that gold was brought because Jesus was a king, and the frankincense because he was a priest, and the myrrh would be foreshadowing his death. No, people look back at texts like Isaiah and assume that that was talking about these gifts. But honestly, we don't know. What about the place where the Magi came to visit Jesus? Now, we've placed them in the creche along with the shepherds and the angels. And we've blended the two narratives from Luke and Matthew to make one great story. And we've read all sorts of meaning into that about people from high estate and low, Jews and foreigners coming together to worship the newborn king. But that's us, not the text. We don't know when they came to see Jesus. If you listen carefully, you'll have noticed that it said they came to the house. The house isn't a manger. So Joseph and Mary seem to have moved between the birth and the visit of the Magi. All we know is it was somewhere in Bethlehem. But people have spent lots of time speculating on this. And then there is the big MacGuffin, the star. Now, I cannot tell you how much time scholars have spent puzzling over the star and trying to figure out just what it was. People have speculated Halley's Comet, and then people have removed that from consideration because it came too early. And people have talked about the conjunction of planets and speculated that maybe there was a supernova somewhere. But do you notice how people are trying to fit the narrative into the natural world? I'm actually rather grateful for an evangelical commentary I read on this text, which suggested that maybe it was a supernatural event. Think about it. Stars don't travel along and then just stop. And we in the church have preached that Jesus Christ was crucified and then resurrected. So what's to stop God from doing something unusual in the heavens? Why do we worry? All of this stuff helps to get the story flowing, but it isn't integral to the plot. I'm going to guess that most people here are familiar with the Maltese Falcon. You've read the book by Dashiell Hammett, or you've seen the movie with Humphrey Bogart. And you remember that there are people chasing around hither and yon, to and fro, trying to find the bird. The gold-encrusted statuette made by the Knights of Malta. It was covered in lacquer. And the bird does not matter to us. What we're interested in is how Sam Spade deals with the situation and all the different characters he meets along the way, all of the double-crossing and the betrayal. What stands out for you from the movie? It's Humphrey Bogart and Peter Lorre and Sidney Greenstreet and Mary Astor. It's not the bird. So we need to set the MacGuffins aside for Matthew and look at what really matters here. God came to us. God came to be with us. God chose to live as one of us, to suffer as one of us, and to die as one of us. That's the big deal here. That's what we're celebrating during Christmas, which in some ways has become a MacGuffin in itself. For so much of our society, Christmas ended at 11:59 p.m. on December 25th. Poof, it's over. But we all know that Christmas is 12 days long, and it will end tomorrow on Epiphany. And Epiphany isn't some add-on. It isn't some footnote. It's the culmination. Remember, an Epiphany is a revelation. And the big news is that God came to us in Jesus Christ. No wonder we celebrate. No wonder we have parties and sing special songs. That's a big deal. And indeed, it is the biggest deal of all. Now, I want to get back to one of the MacGuffins, and that was the gifts. Did any of you notice the thing that I did not mention? Before the Magi presented the gifts of gold and frankincense and myrrh, they paid Jesus homage. The first thing they gave him was their worship. The first thing these people from away, these people from another land, did was recognize that something special was going on. Now, I'm not saying that they were some kind of proto-Christians, but they knew that in that manger, a special baby had been born, and they had been called to pay him homage and to worship him. And they traveled a long distance. And given what we know about travel conditions at that time, they were willing to face dangers. But they came to see Jesus. And those around him, well, they reacted with indifference and hostility. And I will note, in this time of resurgent anti-Semitism, this is not meant to be understood as the Jews did something wrong and the Gentiles were A-OK. We are the people near Jesus right now. And we so often do not focus on the things that matter. We focus on the MacGuffins. We focus on our church fights and on politics. On all sorts of things that don't help to share the good news of Jesus with the world. So I leave you with a question. And I want you to bear in mind what the Magi brought to Jesus. They brought their wealth. They brought commitment. And I believe they brought the best of what they had and who they were. And that's a very appropriate response to the gift that God had shared with the world. Remember John 3:16? For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son. God's giving off the top. He's giving the middle and the bottom too. But what about us? And this isn't some kind of clever stewardship plea. It's something deeper. How are we leading our lives? What are we willing to give of ourselves to God? Are we going to give from the top? Or are we just going to share what's left over? So think about the message of Christmas, and think about the tremendous gift that we have been given in Jesus Christ. Don't focus on the MacGuffins, but let's focus on the Christ child.